morning. My name is Michael McCusker. Donald Trump's Hitler-esque use of National Guards to intimidate and threaten American cities and their citizens is no less than a blatant coup attempt to rule the USA as a Hitler-esque copycat for the rest of his miserable life, and perhaps an aristocratic-style succession for his blood relatives, his sister an exception. Trump's public goal is to dominate and eliminate democratic power in the USA, as though he seems to preen that he is one among American patriot revolutionaries, while claiming to wipe out any notion of revolution by his political foes. He is, if anyone needs reminding, a wartime coward, though certainly not a pacifist. He would that so-called patriots seize the government in his behalf, occupying American cities like Nazis. This alone demands his impeachment, as well as imprisonment, though of course the Bill of Rights most likely forestalls that form of justice. And now, by Robert Mackey. Donald Trump says he is deploying troops to Portland, Oregon. Donald Trump said this past Saturday he is deploying troops to Portland, Oregon, quote, authorizing full force if necessary, unquote, ignoring pleas from local officials and the state's congressional delegation, who suggested that the president was misinformed or lying about the nature and scale of a single small protest outside one federal immigration enforcement office. Trump made the announcement on social media using references to anti-fascists and U.S. Immigration Customs Enforcement, known as ICE. He claimed that the deployment was necessary, quote, to protect war-ravaged Portland and any of our immigration and customs enforcement facilities under siege from attack by Antifa and other domestic terrorists, quote unquote. The White House did not provide details in connection with Trump's announcement, including a timeline for the deployment or what troops would be involved. Portland's Mayor Keith Wilson said at a hastily assembled news conference Friday that the city had become aware of, quote, a sudden influx of federal agents in our city. We did not ask for them to come. They are here without clear precedent or purpose, unquote. The president has sent agents here to create chaos and riots in Portland, to induce a reaction, to induce protests, to induce conflicts. His goal is to make Portland look like what he has been describing it as, Oregon's junior senator Jeff Merkley said. He wants to induce a violent exchange. Let us not grant him that wish. Let us be the force of orderly, peaceful protest. And that was Merkley. And the senator also drew attention to video evidence from the local newspaper, The Oregonian, which showed federal agents using force against a small number of protesters outside the ICE facility who remained peaceful. Although a spokesperson for the Oregon National Guard told the Oregonian that no official request for troops had been made yet, convoys of dozens of federal agents in marked and unmarked SUVs were seen this past Friday entering a federal building downtown and an ICE field office in a residential neighborhood that has been the scene of regular protests by dozens of protesters. The President of the United States is directing his self-proclaimed Secretary of War to unleash militarized federal forces in an American city he disagrees with, Representative Maxine Dexter wrote in a social media statement on Saturday, referring in part to the Pentagon Chief Pete Hegseth. This is an egregious abuse of power and a betrayal of our most basic American values. Authoritarians rely on fear to divide us. Portland will not give them that, said Maxine Dexter. Both of Oregon's U.S. senators and three of its House representatives had, in recent days, strongly rejected Trump's claims about mass anarchy in the city, a fiction intended to justify the unnecessary deployment of federal troops as part of an authoritarian crackdown. Ron Wyden, the state's senior Democratic senator, told reporters this past Friday, "It's important to recognize that the president's argument is a fable. It does not resemble the truth. If he watches the TV show in the morning and he sees Portland mentioned, he says it's a terrible place," Wyden added. During an Oval Office event on Thursday, to announce that the administration intends to investigate and disrupt what it claims is organized political violence, quote unquote, funded by left-wing groups, Trump made several wild claims about Portland, which was a center of racial justice protests in 2020 after the murder of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer. But life has long since returned to normal, and barriers around the federal courthouse and police headquarters downtown have been removed. The president, however, apparently deceived by video of a handful of protesters gathered outside the ICE facility in a southwest Portland neighborhood, broadcast by conservative outlets, insisted that the city has been in nonstop, quote, anarchy, unquote, since 2020 and is barely livable. Portland is, I don't know how anybody lives there. It's amazing, but it's anarchy out there, Trump said. He then claimed falsely that most of the city's retail stores had closed due to arson attacks and, quote, the few shops that are open, unquote, were covered in plywood. Describing the small numbers of protesters who have gathered outside an ICE facility that has been illegally used for detentions in a residential neighborhood, Trump claimed, without evidence, these are professional agitators, these are bad people, and they are paid a lot of money by rich people. But we're going to get out there and we're going to do a pretty big number on those Portland people who are doing that. That's a quote by President Bone Spurs. Representative Suzanne Bonamici, an Oregon Democrat, said on Friday, "This proclaimed war on Antifa is completely a fallacy. Antifa is an ideology. It is not a group. And so we are extremely concerned with what President Trump is going to try to do with that pronouncement." Donald Trump does not care about safety, Bonamici said. If he cared about safety, he would not have released 1,600 convicted insurrectionists into the streets. He cares about control and authoritarianism, she added, referring to Trump's clemency for those who carried out the 6th January 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol after he lost the 2020 election to Joe Biden. Portland does not need the military. We do not want them. We do not need them. We do not welcome them to come here under his orders, Bonamici said. Trump has sent military troops to the Democratic-controlled cities of Los Angeles and Washington, D.C. so far in his second presidency. He has discussed doing the same in Memphis and New Orleans, which are also Democratic strongholds. And New Orleans was my last duty station in the Marine Corps after Vietnam. And now, by an old friend, Kenneth Roth, Trump's attack on George Soros is the next step in the autocrat's guidebook. And that is from The Guardian. Having already attacked judges, lawyers, media companies, and universities, the president has set his sights on civilians. As a former federal prosecutor, I know that prosecutors should be guided by the facts. But in his determination to hound George Soros, Donald Trump wants prosecutors to become agents of his personal vendetta. Facts be damned. That is the conclusion to be drawn from the instructions issued by one of Trump's senior Justice Department officials to a group of U.S. attorneys' offices across the country, telling them to investigate Soros Foundation. This is the latest step in Trump's implementation of the autocrat's handbook, with the aim of chipping away at the check and balances on presidential authority. Having already attacked judges, lawyers, media companies, and universities, Trump now sets his sights on civil society. Soros, a longtime and extraordinarily generous funder of progressive causes around the world, including the United States, is target number one. Trump shares this fixation with the likes of Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, Europe's most prominent autocrat, who for years has used Soros as a scapegoat for widespread and growing dislike of his corrupt, self-serving rule. As the name of Soros' Open Society Foundations suggests, he promotes the free and public exchange of ideas. Soros made his billions by recognizing that markets are fallible. He gave away billions based on the insight that human governance is imperfect also, and that the best way to compensate is with independent voices engaged in free debate. Having survived as a Jewish boy in Hungary under Nazi rule, Soros understands that we are safer when people can contest government dogma. Soros has funded not only human rights activists who defend open societies, but also intellectuals and journalists who have pushed the limits of public debate, as well as organizations devoted to redressing a range of injustices. My former organization, Human Rights Watch, was and remains a major beneficiary. Despite his brilliance, Soros is too modest to believe he has the ultimate answers to society's most vexing problems. He is always self-critical, deeply aware of his inability to see the full truth, skeptical of any moment's conventional wisdom. At age 95, he has stepped back from an active role in his foundation, which is now chaired by his son, Alex. But his vision still guides the foundation and is antithetical to Trump's delusional belief that he alone is the guardian of all wisdom, while critics are to be demonized and persecuted. Soros has the self-confidence to eschew the kinds of sycophantic lackeys whom Trump prefers. The debate that Soros has long promoted is peaceful. That is the essence of the open society that he champions. OSF recently reiterated that they, quote, unequivocally condemn terrorism and do not fund terrorism. Our activities are peaceful and lawful, and our guarantees are expected to abide by human rights principles and comply with the law, unquote. But that has not stopped Trump from insinuating without evidence that Soros and OSF are somehow supporters of people who engage in political violence. I have known Soros for more than 3 decades and have never seen a hint of that. It is the opposite of who he is. But stubborn reality has never impeded Trump and his acolytes in their universe of alternative facts. And that's a quote. Straining to justify the vendetta, Trump's Justice Department points to a report issued by a group that calls itself Capital Research Center. It is filled with tendentious McCarthyite allusions about OSF grantees having alleged sympathy for Hamas or tolerance of direct action, a supposed reference to violence. One of the prominent examples it cites is OSF's funding of a highly respected Palestinian human rights group, Al-Haq, one of 6 Palestinian organizations that the Israeli government in 2021 designated as supposed terrorists. But the Israeli government bandies about accusations of terrorism the same way it tries to silence critics with false allegations of anti-Semitism. I have worked with Al-Haq throughout my career and have always known it to be a fact-based, principled, and peaceful organization that fairly and objectively investigates and reports on Israeli abuses in extraordinary difficult circumstances. Another OSF guarantee is the human rights group Dawn, which was founded by Jamal Khashoggi, the Saudi journalist who was murdered by the Saudi government. One of its stated offenses is that, well, it condemned Hamas's 7 October 2023 attack. It focused on the civilian, not the military victims. That such evidence, and that's a quote, might tempt Trump to order criminal charges against Soros under his newly announced effort to counter domestic terrorism and organized political violence, again a quote from Trump, means that almost anyone could be targeted. In persecuting Soros, Trump has taken on a tough target. Like Harvard, which successfully sued rather than capitulate, Soros has the means to fight back. Moreover, unlike some law firms that cut deals with Trump to escape his wrath, 100 progressive foundations have announced that they will mount a common defense if any of them faces Trump's vengeance. That mutual support is the right response to Trump's divide and conquer strategy. I would expect that the courts will promptly dismiss any action that Trump takes against Soros. Despite Trump's efforts to bully them, federal judges have maintained their independence, and many continue to apply the law rather than Trump's dictates. A fact-free prosecution of a well-known critic is a recipe for judicial rejection. But that doesn't relieve Soros and his foundation from the burden of defending themselves from fabricated charges, which can be substantial. Trump's abuse of his power to persecute an independent voice, his posturing to his base in utter contempt of the First Amendment, should be widely and firmly denounced. Unless the pushback is intense enough, Soros may be Trump's first civil society target, but not the last. And that was by Kenneth Roth, former executive director of Human Rights Watch, 1993 to 2022. And he is a visiting professor at Princeton University School of Public and International Affairs. His book, Righting Wrongs, 3 decades on the Front Lines Battling Abusive Government, is published by Knopf and Allen Lane. And if he is indeed the Kenneth Roth I believe him to be, he was once upon a time a student of Portland State University. And now, by Bernie Sanders, the American system is badly broken. Let's take a deep breath and for one moment forget about Donald Trump, Jimmy Kimmel, the UN, Charlie Kirk, Gaza, a government shutdown, and the other crises that we face. Let's talk instead about the reality which the corporate-controlled media and the corporate-controlled political system don't talk about very much. What we are witnessing right now is the rise of two Americas, one for the billionaire class and one for everybody else. The one America, the richest people are becoming obscenely richer and have never, ever had it so good. That America is overflowing with unimaginable wealth, greed, and opulence that makes the Gilded Age seem very modest. And then there is the second America, an America where a majority of people live paycheck to paycheck, struggling to secure the very basic necessities of life, food, healthcare, housing, and education. The simple truth is that never before in our history have so few had so much and power, while so many live in economic desperation. In the first America, one man, Elon Musk, the richest man in the world, worth more than $480 billion, owns more wealth than the bottom 52% of American households. After spending $290 million to put Trump back into the White House, Musk has become more than $180 billion richer since Election Day. That's a pretty good return on his investment. But that's apparently not good enough for Musk. In order to keep him motivated, as CEO Tesla's board proposed, giving him a $1 trillion pay package if he meets certain goals, $1 trillion. Jeff Bezos, the fourth wealthiest person in the world, has a fortune of $233 billion. He can sail to Venice on his $500 million yacht for his reported $50 million wedding, where he gave his wife a $3 million to $5 million ring, because, among other things, his effective tax rate is just a reported 1.1%. Mark Zuckerberg, the third richest person in the world, is worth $258 billion. He has spent $110 million to buy 11 homes in Palo Alto, California, to create his own private compound, and another $270 million for more than 2,300 acres in Hawaii, with a $5,000 square foot underground bunker and three yachts reported worth more than $530 million. Larry Ellison, the second wealthiest person in the world, worth $377 billion, recently became nearly $100 billion richer in a single day. He owns a private island in Hawaii and a fleet of jets, and now he is reportedly trying to buy up major media companies such as Warner Brothers and CNN. Together, these four men alone are worth more than $1.3 trillion. But it's not just them. The top 1% now owns more wealth than the bottom 93%. The 1% lives in a world completely removed from ordinary Americans. They don't ride overcrowded subways to get to work or sit in traffic jams to get home. They fly on private jets and helicopters they own. They live in mansions all over the world, send their kids to the most elite private schools, and vacation on their own islands. And for fun, some spend millions to fly off into space on their own rocket ships. And then there is the other America, where the vast majority of our people live. For them, the economy is not just broken, it is collapsing. In this America, despite a massive increase in worker productivity, real weekly wages for the average American worker are lower today than they were more than 52 years ago. In this America, people are unable to afford a doctor's visit, if they're lucky enough to find one, are paying over half their limited incomes on rent or a mortgage, and are unable to afford the outrageous cost of childcare or send their kids to college. In this America, the price of vegetables, fruit, and other healthy foods is beyond the budget for many. For most Americans, the system is not just broken. It is collapsing and increasingly resembling life in the third world. Everyone needs health care. Yet today, more than 85 million Americans are uninsured or underinsured, a number that will rise by at least 15 million under Trump's so-called Big Beautiful Bill. Everyone needs housing. Yet today, nearly 800,000 Americans are homeless, and more than 20 million households pay more than 50% of their limited incomes on rent or a mortgage. Since 2000, average rents have more than doubled, and the median price of a home has soared to more than $435,000. Everyone needs a decent education. Yet today, our child care system is broken and wildly expensive. Many of our public schools are dilapidated, with teachers underpaid and underappreciated, and American students are falling behind in math, science, and reading compared with their international peers. College education is unaffordable for millions, and vocational schools fail to train the workers we desperately need. Everyone needs a secure retirement, yet nearly half of older workers have no retirement savings and no idea how they will ever retire with any shred of dignity or respect. Meanwhile, 22% of seniors are trying to survive on an income of less than $15,000 a year. Enough is enough. As Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis said in 1933, we can have democracy in this country, or we can have great wealth concentrated in the hands of the few, but we cannot have both. That warning is even more relevant today. In this pivotal moment in American history, we must create a government and an economy that works for all, or we will continue sliding into oligarchy, where the billionaire class controls our government, economy, and our culture. Let me say to my fellow Americans, I know day-to-day life can take a toll, but we must not allow ourselves to fall into despair. If we do not allow ourselves to be divided up by Trump and his oligarch allies, we can change the path we are on. The choice is clear. Let's stand together for democracy and justice. This is Michael McCusker. Beware of a hostile occupation of Oregon instigated by America's, with a K, president and would-be Hitleresque dictator, who is actually trumping himself by his clinically stupid Caesar Caligula personality disorder.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on The Story Told since 1987. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times-Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.